Hi, welcome back to Cambridge Inside Out. I'm Judy Nathans.
We're still here. Yeah. I'm Robert.
So we're going to meander to a couple other things.
A couple other things here.
I mean, it is an election year.
Yeah.
As if we didn't know.
This is true. Yeah. Maybe just a few little quick more things from Sullivan Chamber and City Council meeting last night. Mm-hmm. One thing was this sort of really probably the single most annoying city council order I have seen all year was one that was introduced several weeks ago. Maybe it was actually even, was it at the summer meeting?
I think it might have been at the summer meeting. It seems to have been there a lot.
So it was Councillor Zondervan, and it was basically demanding that the city of Cambridge issue an apology to the proprietors of this
Upper West.
You know, who are also applying apparently for a package store license up on, I think, Cedar Street. Whatever. You know, now the proprietors, who shall not be named, they were city council candidates already.
Both of them, right?
Oh, yeah, and they're just using it to sort of, they go to public meetings, they're always videotaping them.
Didn't they have another issue that they were fighting about a year ago or questioning something about
another
open
issue?
Meeting? No, open
every
meeting.
Imaginable issue.
No, but something about open meeting, it had nothing to do with this particular one about the licensing, was it?
This would, I think, that if I'm not mistaken, that right now there was one thing about the fact that they got nailed for having some open flames.
But they were not even real flames. I mean,
no, they were real flames. But the thing is that the claim was, it said, but there's nothing on the books that says that that's illegal.
Oh, right.
Right? It was just the fire department just arbitrarily made it up.
But then it became about the language and threats and this and that.
Right.
And,
but the thing is, that's sort of been the ongoing problem ever since this dynamic duo entered the scene.
Right. Right.
You know, they're nothing but accusations and harassment, really, quite honestly, of people in multiple departments in the city. So they have not made too many friends.
Yeah.
But now the thing is, okay, because they have not made too many friends, the thing is, they're now claiming that the License Commission is basically targeting them. You know, I don't think that's really true. But the thing is that, so Councillor Zondervan's order basically was demanding the city should drop all charges against them. And apologize to them. As our very capable city solicitor, Nancy Glow, very clearly pointed out last night, there are no charges against them.
Right.
And there never were any charges against them,
Councillor Zondervan. They are suing three different people.
The real issue is that they are suing the members of the license commission.
Which I didn't realize was the fire commissioner and
the fire commissioner, police commissioner, and then Nicole Moretti-Ferrer, who is the executive director of
ongoing litigation.
So so they're being accused of things. And as the solicitor says, these are simply allegations, counselor, you know. Mm-hmm. And so you want to, and the thing is that if you have ongoing litigation for the city, I mean, the silliness of this is just profound. The notion that the city council should, in a public way, make an apology to a group that's suing the city in the middle of the lawsuits, which basically is then a part of the public record.
In the policy order, did Councillor Zondervan know that there were suits against? I think he was
going on really wrong information, some of which he may have read in a local blog somewhere.
Yeah.
But the thing is that these are allegations only, you know. Mm-hmm. And if you want to talk about it all, you really should do it in executive session.
Oh, right.
And the thing is, if there is ongoing litigation, for the city council to vote to say, oh, we're so sorry, we're terrible, terrible people.
Or to even discuss
if that doesn't affect the litigation, I don't know what would.
Nothing could be done publicly. Right. You couldn't do it in an open session.
And furthermore, the License Commission has jurisdiction over certain things. And the city council has jurisdiction over certain things. And the city council can't just direct the License Commission to do this or that, you know? I mean, it's one thing if you pass an ordinance and then they're charged with enforcing an ordinance. Yeah. That's a different matter. But you can't just sort of say, well, we don't like a cut of your jib, License Commissioners.
Yeah.
We demand that you apologize to these people or we're going to get really mad and stamp our feet.
Yeah.
So anyway, this was introduced.
There were two orders related to that.
Well, there was an order introduced at the summer meeting, and then the summer meeting
it was unfinished business.
But what happened at the summer meeting? People said, "Well, look, if you're also at the simultaneously arguing about what is the meets and bounds of License Commission's jurisdiction to decide on matters, You know, and even though the city solicitor has opined on this so many times now that mm-hmm. that it really should be known, but they said, well, we should have a hearing or something basically to get information back about exactly what the limits are. Totally reasonable request, quite honestly, even though, in fact, all the facts are available to anybody who would look for it. Mm-hmm. So the thing is, so there were actually two items left. One was the order from Zondervan. Right. The other one was the late order from the summer meeting, I think came from Toomey or something, about, you know, just, you know, explaining things, right?
Oh, he charter right that.
Yeah, so they were both made subject to the charter, right? And then council reconvened in September. They came back and...
The 9th, last week.
Right, and the thing is, but then everything was wacky last week.
Oh, right.
So because that of all the hearings,
all
so
the
they
got pushed
they put everything on unfinished business, so then finally they got to it.
Okay,
so they were getting, you know, back and forth. The smartest person in the room was Nancy Gloa, honestly.
Yeah.
And she pretty much read the Riot Act. And Zondervan, I guess to his credit, said, well, you know, said, what do you think about that, Councilor Zondervan? He said, I guess this pretty much defines getting the book thrown at you.
Yeah, right, yeah.
And it did.
Yeah.
The book got thrown at him. He was so totally wrong. It's to be comic.
Yeah.
But the thing is that, you know, then they said, well, maybe we should, you know, do something with this. And then I feel, was it Councilor Toomey or somebody finally said, look, I move the question. You know, this was a council order asking the city to do this. We can talk about this. We can refer to the law
wasn't
department.
Wasn't it talk about a roundtable?
No, they can refer it to a roundtable. They can do with this. Or we can simply dispose of it.
Mm-hmm.
So they moved the question, and it was one councillor in favor, Zondervan.
Yeah. One present.
One present, Dennis Carlone. And
Jan Devereaux.
On that one, it was Dennis Carlone. Yes.
Oh, you're right. It was something else. Yeah,
and then
right.
And then seven councillors saying, get it out of here.
Right.
And you know, for various reasons, maybe they know the individuals, but most significantly, it's simply because they understood this is not really something that should probably be before the council, and that, or as an order, it should have been rejected flat out.
So what happened to the other one, the other order about the license commission?
Well, I mean, I think...
But didn't they vote on that?
They said that's fine because...
So is that going to be a roundtable?
They will at some point schedule a roundtable and they will talk about
this. All right,
but
nothing
I mean, the
immediate.
Truth is, I mean, there are questions about...
Whose jurisdiction...
Right, I mean, the city of Cambridge had, and the License Commission decided, with the blessing of the council, going back into the 80s, they had things like liquor license caps in certain areas. They had policies that basically drove the cost of a liquor license up through the roof eventually.
Which is crazy now because look at it. Yeah.
Yeah, just like taxi cab medallions were going through the roof. And then Uber came along and
gutted
the industry. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, some councillors advocated for loosening things up to allow for non-transferable licenses.
So the council wanted that,
and they started.
But I thought some councillors are complaining now that people are stuck. What happened was
you know, I may give a slight detail wrong here or two, but the truth is that what they did was they were issuing these so-called non-transferable licenses, no fee license. I think it was a fee, but it was not.
You can't benefit from it.
And then somebody must have brought it to in front of a court or a regulatory body, and they said, well, no, actually, they can all be bought and sold. And they said, we have a problem. So they went and readjusted things.
Oh, I see.
And I think the License Commission, and Nicole Moratti Ferrer in particular, basically has been updating and bringing into the compliance with state standards all the things that the License Commission do. She's been doing a great job, honestly. Mm. She deserves awards.
Hmm.
Actually, she did receive some awards.
Okay.
And the thing is that what it means is that if you overpaid for a liquor license, maybe you kind of are going to have to eat that one too, because now it's not worth much more than anything
else. But
was
that something the city made it, or are they going by state guidelines?
I mean, if you want a license, you basically say, well, you just need to prove a quote public need.
But how did that change? Who made that official? Was it a state?
It was. I think is that true across the state? The caps that City of Cambridge had instituted were probably a little questionable throughout, but nobody ever questioned it.
But it wasn't just Cambridge. I've heard this was happening other places.
Right, like over in Boston. I mean, Doyle's, my favorite watering hole in Boston, sold its license to Dottie.
He sold it because they want to get out of that
business. I know. It breaks my heart.
$500,000. I was just there on Sunday night for the last... Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So anyway, that's still going
so,
on.
Right. So the thing is that the police commissioner, the fire commissioner, and the executive director are still under threat of lawsuit from these two characters. And, you know, ultimately, I'm probably not a whole lot will come of it. But the point is that, you know, they are city employees and they are basically under threat of litigation from some unhappy people. And that's
all right. Just back up.
It's so totally out of the realm of city council business as to be ridiculous.
Back up for a second here, though. If Doyle sold his, that means in Boston you can still sell your license and we can't do it in Cambridge? You know,
every city has its own regulations.
Can the Cambridge person sell it to a Boston entity?
No.
Oh.
No.
Well, then something's wrong with all of that.
And remember also, I would have to look this up, but Boston is actually special in the state. There are certain laws that work there that are valid there that do not apply for all the other cities and towns in Massachusetts.
Now you got me curious about what other towns are doing because it does seem unfair then if these people are stuck with these licenses.
It's true. But the thing is, that's not the issue with the Upper West.
No, that's a separate issue.
It's a totally separate issue. Separate.
Okay. You know, all right, what else? I'm sick of that.
Well, actually, one thing, maybe not a whole lot to say about it, but... it was promised that the advocates for municipal broadband were going to bring a petition before the council, which they delivered to the council.
My name's on it.
Right.
Just because it's only looking to have another...
A feasibility. So. Right. And I think that's a fine idea. But, you know, the idea is should this be a one-horse town where you have to go to Comcast or nobody?
Yeah, no.
And it's not quite that way because there's groups like Starry who...
Yeah, but that's very questionable. You have to have certain sight
lines. So there's things rolling out.
It really is the only game in town.
But it is basically the only game in town. So the idea would be should the city invest in municipal broadband? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think it's a nice ideal. You know, I think if you ask almost anybody, say, hey, wouldn't you like to have an option that you could get
through Concord this? Has it, Longmont, Colorado, whatever, but you have to look at a lot of the details.
It is attractive.
Yeah. If you own your own utility electric company, it helps, which is true in Concord. Right. And also, this is not say anything about cable television. So just remember that you'd still have to have a cable TV subscription, and you'd probably still have to go to Comcast, so...
I mean, everything is evolving.
It's great for people who just want to stream and all that. I'm just saying there's a lot of issues here, but I still think a feasibility study would be good.
I think it's a good study, but the one aspect of the feasibility that I would really like to understand, which maybe the study can't even address, is the future. So the thing, is, and it's this has always been my concern, is that
you're right. Technology
So Comcast has this, coaxial cable scattered all over the city, feeding into every home. So, in theory, if you wanted to build out a municipal broadband network, you have to go and build out your own network. Now, it doesn't have to be done with the same technology. It could be done with
The city repeaters. Uses a fiber optic thing.
You could do fiber optic. Yeah. You could do a combination of things.
That's what Verizon does, but they won't even touch Cambridge.
Right. Though they are doing Fios in Boston.
I know.
After years of not having...
That's true. So who knows?
Phasing it in neighborhood by neighborhood.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah.
So the thing is my biggest concern would be, because, you know, as I watch these little extra transmitter receiver things from what's called NextG or something being put on top of telephone poles.
You mean the 5G network?
It was even a city council hearing about this.
Oh, yeah.
And when I look at that, I say to myself, okay, so there's new technologies being deployed.
Wireless.
And if these things actually have a very serious amount of broadband capability,
it's going to
is
be
it
the
possible
next
that
thing.
If the city were to be start building out some technology, by the time they finish building the network, is 2 weeks later,
it's changed.
Is it obsolete? Right. You know? Yeah. So my biggest concern has just been the financial exposure. If you're going to basically take taxpayer money or a combination of taxpayer money and a separate entity that gets created,
they would basically run it. They wouldn't necessarily pay for it. You would pay them to manage it because the city doesn't want to get involved in selling subscriptions and all that. But the city would be responsible for the infrastructure, I think.
And that's where
there's a big deal.
You know, and I've heard some estimates in the order of $180
million. Well, that's what the Broadband Task Force came up with.
Exactly.
That was 3 years ago.
Yeah, so it could be more now, right? Or less, because maybe there's different technology.
That's true. But maybe it's useful. I mean,
I think it's a good thing.
The big gripe
study.
Is that people don't like the fact that our current city manager has basically put his foot down on it. where I, apparently they're referring to the last right. one.
But Robert, what I would but I would say to that
who
is
was open
that,
to it.
You know, again, I'm not going to put words in Bob Healy's mouth but or Richie Rossi's mouth
yeah.
or Louis DePasquale, but all three of these city managers, and Lisa Peterson briefly when she was there mm-hmm. as an acting city manager, I think all come from the point of view that, you know, that putting the city at financial risk is not good in terms of bond ratings and the ability to finance other projects. Mm. So they tend to be very cool to something that's going to do that. Even spinning off the Cambridge Health Alliance and making, you know, it used to be the city hospital. It was part of the city budget.
Yeah.
And it was could really fluctuate. And it was in a time where healthcare costs were changing drastically. And it was could have been a real albatross around the neck of the city. So they spun it off, made it an independent authority, with where the city has a lot of control of it still. Mm-hmm. You know, but the thing is, this way it doesn't have the financial exposure.
Yeah.
So I just don't see any of the city managers up to this point wanting to embrace something that puts the city in some sort of financial risk. Now, if you can show a feasibility study that says, hey, come on, this is like Flint, this will be great,
yeah,
minimal
but who
risk.
Does wouldn't that be an outside person to be objective?
Well, if you basically partnered up with some other entity that was willing to do some of the infrastructure rollout, but doing it in partnership with
the
city.
Yeah, but then they're going to be, how impartial is that? You need a really impartial person to say, this could work, this
well,
could
not
work.
Well, so it's all about a matter of how you write the contract, right?
True. Or the, what is it, not RIP.
Right.
The,
so if the majority
the
of the board
proposal,
must be appointed
RIP.
By the city manager or something like that, right?
All
maybe
right.
you could do that. So anyway, there was some silliness because it was only the names and they hadn't put in their address and so it wasn't a proper petition. But the truth is it's not a zoning petition. It's not an ordinance.
Yeah.
It's simply a request.
Yeah.
So I don't know why they would get so hot and bothered about whether people put their address.
Seriously.
Because all it is just a bunch of people saying, hey, come on, Louis, let's do something here, will you? You know?
Yep.
And Louis' response up to this point is to create, let's appoint the Digital Equity Access
and you say that
Commission
did happen?
Or something. Yeah. Oh, yeah, they're still actually taking applicants for it.
Really?
You know, and so if
are
the issue is just
people
giving
that
people
want
access,
this on that, hopefully?
Probably. But, you know, there are people who are, well, anyway, so that's if the issue is getting access for people who can't afford the broadband, whatever, then I think that committee is primarily addressing that. But the thing, it's a much bigger issue, which is what if you could afford it, but you just want something better or a little bit less expensive
better
options?
Can I bring something up? Yes, because that was brought up by Christopher. He testified and he said, some people who can't afford paying 30% of their blah, 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 they're paying $300 a month. And I'm thinking, they're probably getting cable television.
Yeah.
They're not just getting
Broadband's not going to cost you $300.
And also, I haven't had a real good response by, is no one using the Comcast Internet Essentials program for $10 a month? Is it very onerous to have to qualify for that?
Well, you know,
it seems to me that they do have this
program. I have
program.
To say, you know, as a one-time Comcast customer who then was a non-Comcast customer, who is now a Comcast customer.
Yeah.
I remember that if you wanted to just get the basic, the most basic
cable
package for
TV,
but the point is that
this is just internet.
Comcast business model is to not let people know about the cheap options very much.
Yeah, well, this isn't a cheap, you have to qualify. It's
right.
a low income and it's just internet. It's not cable TV.
Right.
But still, I'm
but
just saying,
if they
you're
can
right.
get you on the hook
That's
for something
right.
more expensive, they've
no,
always
no.
tried to do that.
You're right. I mean,
up to and including for those of us who watch television, remember that?
Yeah. Hello.
They would actually take the things I liked off of the basic package, put it into the higher tier.
Right.
Because
you need that. Yeah.
So if you wanted to watch Twilight Zone episodes, you couldn't get it out of the basics anymore, you know?
You have to get the DVD, Robert.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Well, okay, you're right about that. And
yeah. So anyway, so now it's basically, it's nothing more than a request. There are, I think, probably the majority of city councilors and the majority of a future city council probably would like more movement on this.
Yeah. So they want more options. They don't want to see them in office.
So my guess is that the city manager
is going to have to do something.
Can't forever just kick the can down the road. If they can definitively make the case why this is just going to be financial ruin to do it, then I think the council will be receptive. But the thing is, at some point, Louis got to either move on it or make that case and make it with great clarity.
Right.
Right. So that's going to come, right? Now, there's another thing that's happening now. In fact, happening right now, I might add, too.
Oh, a hearing?
So, No. This is politics now.
Yeah, I know. A lot of time, okay, there's a forum going on.
Right. So there is actually a candidate forum happening in the Ward 6.
Where's Ward 6?
I'm in Ward 6.
Oh, is that mid-Cambridge?
That's mid-Cambridge.
But there's a mid-Cambridge one going on later in the month.
That's right, the Mid-Cambridge Neighborhood Association, okay. Which is actually, I strongly recommend that one.
I've gone to that. It used to be over on Mass Ave, now it's going to be in the cafeteria.
It's done by tables, and I actually like that.
Yeah, I can't go to that one.
It's a lot more interactive. Right. You can interact with the individual counselors.
Right. But tonight's is at the main library. Why is it 5 and 7? They divided. Because there's so many candidates.
There are 22 candidates. I don't know if they're all going, but they decided to split them into two panels. Just like at the Porter Square group, they've been known to split them into two and three panels, I think, last time. Rather than putting, you don't want to have 24 people lined up.
Well, ABC did. Oh, because they didn't have 24, they had 18.
Right.
Minus a couple counselors who were at a meeting.
Yeah, and even 18 is just a lot to have lined up like a beauty pageant there.
Yeah.
So anyway, they made a decision to actually do it. So let me see. What
are you going to go to that? You're going to run over there?
No. Well, honestly, I may be a member of the Ward 6 Democratic City Committee, but I despise it.
Oh.
I really do. The chair is a lunatic. Everybody associated with is lunatics. But the thing is sometimes...
you're really cementing your
reputation. I've got to say it, right? I feel shame to be a part of this group. But the thing is that doesn't mean they can't put on a good forum. They might actually ask good questions. They might get good participation. So
I wonder if CCTV is televising, because they did televise.
They may, yeah.
They Facebook Live ABC one.
I think
one.
They may. So those videos may be available. So it's
I'll
like
find
five.
Out when you
I
walk
think,
out the door.
Maybe
five and seven.
Five
I've got the
seven.
Right here. If you want to go to this for a minute, your civic calendar.
Yeah, we could do that a little bit right here. Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah. So right. The Ward 6 City Council candidates for 5 o'clock and 7 o'clock. Yeah.
And then you've got also tonight a planning board meeting.
Yeah.
Anything big on that?
Charles River Remedies, if they want to open up another pot shop on Church Street in Harvard Square.
Oh, dear. Okay.
I tell you, there's a lot of pot
there
going
go.
Down. Absolutely.
Wait, but that sounds like that's medical. No?
Building
to a retail.
Right.
Yeah.
But the thing is retail cannabis store.
Oh, converted to
a.
Oh, yeah,
the truth
is
they're all going to go recreational
right.
sooner or later anyway.
Okay.
Right. And the thing is in the coming days, I don't know if we have them all up there, but there's going to be more candidate forums coming up as well.
Well, I don't see any.
The thing is, they start happening. The Bowtie Ride is the 22nd.
Yeah, I can't go to that.
Right. But I think I have
here we go. Here's some. Oh, the Climate Action
Coalition. That's very topical.
That's next Wednesday.
September 25th.
25th. I can't
right?
go to
I think
that
in
either.
October is when the Porter Square Group, the Cambridgeport Group,
here you go. So, you got them right here.
So,
all right.
We can. Ward 6 will do a school committee one as
Thursday,
well.
Thursday, October 3rd is the central, is the candidates,
right.
school candidates.
And that's actually from the old Cambridge Teachers Union. So
yeah,
that
that's a good
be,
one. I've gone to that before. Oh, and that's at Central Square.
And I got
Square.
Some information about that. I haven't yet posted.
Oh, okay.
I'll be doing more.
And here we
that.
Go. Ward 6 again.
School committee.
School committee.
Right. So anyway, so there are a few others here as well.
All
but,
right.
But, enough. But the point is, they've actually had some. So there was an ABC one, right?
Yes, and I went to that.
They've already made their endorsements, by the way. Like,
they did?
Yeah, they were announced today, and it was basically look.
Where did you get it? See it?
It was on the internet. Here's how the endorsements work.
Okay.
Were you in support of the overlay? Okay, you got your endorsement. Mm. Were you opposed to the overlay?
You did.
You don't get our endorsement.
Yeah.
So they've basically become a one-issue, a one-trick pony.
Well, they never lied about it. That was their
thing. They started out promoting housing generally and transit-oriented development in very particular. But then they put all their eggs in the overlay basket. And
well, it was the best thing going that kind of met their needs.
It was
I don't
the
blame
only
for
thing
that.
Going.
I know.
And, and I think to the, and I would fault the Community Development Department and the Envision Cambridge process for that. And in fact, it's actually part of the rhetoric I really find deplorable is the people saying like, well, the only piece of housing they have before them and then they chose to table it. How terrible. Well, maybe the bigger question is why was there only one proposal? Why was there only one idea being floated to the, and, the, and every, all else excluded? I think that's kind of an interesting
indictment. Well, it was the newest idea. I guess there have been other ideas. Yeah. There are inclusionary. I mean,
yeah. But the thing is there actually are some people working on some, I think, better ideas.
So maybe they can incorporate that into this.
Right. I mean, for example, how would people feel about producing more units than the overlay allegedly would have produced in Central Square by simply allowing the buildings to house those people happen? How about having something like
that? Well, I don't understand. That's happening now. What do you mean? People don't want any more tall buildings, though.
Is that really true? I don't
know. Well, but you already have. Don't you think Central Square's already gotten a lot of units?
It's gotten a lot of units. Okay, and the thing is, but if you ask people right now, would you be okay with another building of some significance?
But what about North Cambridge tall building?
I agree.
Okay, but isn't that partly what the affordable housing overlay was getting at? Do you object to the whole zoning issue of this?
No, I just would like to see housing aspects. So the thing is, let's say you rezone things down around the area, like in the vicinity of what they call the Boynton Yards. So this is over in the Cambridge Somerville border. There used to be a lot of junkyards. Everything is very low scale over there.
Boynton, huh? Where is this?
Heading over toward Union Square.
Okay, right? Yeah, where the green line is going to go through. Have you been over there? They're building stuff there.
They're building some things there, but there's actually a tremendous amount of space that is unbuilt and unproposed.
I think a lot of that's been bought up, and I think it's...
And they're building up to the confines of existing zoning limits, too. But the thing is that you could modify zoning there, and I will do the math for you and tell you, you will produce more housing and even more affordable housing units if you did that and pursued that than anything that they
claim. Okay, but is that property affordable to the people that could buy it?
The thing is people who would be developing it for housing generally with a very significant, and even a super inclusionary component for these.
Oh, so we're talking about private developers and then throw out some inclusion. Right, so you're really more of a proponent of inclusionary zoning than 100% affordable.
By far. And you'll produce far more units, and you'll also be responding to the demand.
Okay. I like the model, which doesn't seem to be discussed a lot, is mixed income developments. Because either we have very high-end with inclusionary, or we have 100% affordable, but where's the mixed income we used to have?
Judy, that sounds like a great idea. Yeah, why didn't the community development department propose
that? Well, because I think apparently it's not very financially feasible anymore.
I don't agree with that. All right. I really don't.
We'll end with that.
You're right. Zoning adjustments can make it so. So anyway, we'll see you soon.
Next week.
Next week. Yes, next week on Cambridge Inside Out.
Bye.